welcome to Under the Dome, the State Journal Register podcast about Illinois state government and politics. I'm editor Angie Muse, and I'm here with political writer Bernie Schoenberg and State House reporter Doug Finke. And this week, it's all about politics. What are the takeaways from the election?
Well, I think you would have to look at the primary and say it was a good night for Democrats, just in the fact that a lot of Democrats showed up. And J.B. Pritzker also won easily in a field of six candidates, with three of them considered the serious candidates. Pritzker got 45% of the vote to just under 27% for Daniel Biss and just more than 24% for Chris Kennedy. People had thought, with all of the anti-Pritzker advertising done by Bruce Rauner and then his opponents, that it might be close, but the organization that he had and the pretty much year-long campaign, including a lot of visits and repeated visits to downstate, including one to Springfield on Monday night, just showed that he was able to amass a good showing, better than many people thought. On the Republican side, as I had put in a column a year ago, you would never have thought that a first-term incumbent Governor Bruce Rauner, the Republican, would have a serious primary challenge. Jeannie Ives, enraged by some of the legislation involving social issues like abortion that were signed by Bruce Rauner. She's a state representative from Wheaton. She ended up with nearly 49%, 48.6% of the vote in the Republican primary. And there were also... And so Rauner is claiming victory, obviously.
He did win.
He did win with 51.4%. And he is now trying to work to rebuild the party. Let's talk about economic issues and move forward. But as the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform noted, Democratic turnout was like 325,000 more people than they had in 2010 when they had a governor primary that was, you know, significant, and Republican turnout dropped 138,000 since the last contested primary in 2014. So you really hit, I mean, Bruce Rauner's vote total in his win was 361,000. J.B. Pritzker's was 573,000. So you just had a lot more Democrats voting, and I think it reflects not only what's been going on in Illinois with the two-year budget impasse during Rauner's first term, but also reaction to the national scene. President Trump is, of course, first term. This fall's election will be the first midterm election of President Trump's presidency. You've seen a lot of people demonstrating in the streets, including the women's marches in Washington and Springfield and other places the day after President Trump's inauguration. So there is a Democratic enthusiasm, Democratic Party enthusiasm across the nation, which seems to be reflected in Illinois, which is going to make it even harder for Bruce Rauner this fall. We'll see where it goes.
And those numbers also illustrate exactly why Rauner, it's critical for him to mend fences with the Ives supporters. And I think it's going to be difficult for him, because I think a lot of her supporters were motivated by the fact he signed that abortion bill. And I'm not sure. I mean, they tend to be very hardcore on that issue, and I'm not sure that his appeals to, you know, let's unite for be against Madigan and let's unite for term limits and things, reforms like that, will necessarily sway some of those people. I think the danger he faces is that they may decide to sit it out because they're still so upset with what he did on the abortion bill.
Sure, and you know, as you said, Doug, he was extending the olive branch in his victory speech Tuesday night, but you know, on Wednesday, you know, Ives has already said that she'll vote for him, but she's not endorsing for him. You know, she's not endorsing him, and you know, I think that's something that's going to speak volumes to her supporters.
Yeah, and again, getting back to the turnout, the fact this is supposed to be a big year for Democratic turnout indicates that Rauner needs all the support he can get to be competitive, I think, in the November election, and that includes the conservatives who are currently on the outs with him.
Well, the other thing, too, is that when you look at the Democratic primary ballot this time, there were a couple of, especially here in central Illinois, you had a high-profile 13th congressional district primary, which, you know, Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan won easily. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the attorney general's race, of course, got a lot of attention with a crowded field. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the consensus was, you know, highly qualified candidates and, you know, some with better name recognition than others.
And I think that the turnout or the result of that election, I think, really accrued to the benefit of the Democrats as well. Here's the situation. The two top performers, and I think it was clear before the election in that Democratic field for Attorney General, were former Governor Pat Quinn, who has also been state treasurer and lieutenant governor and governor, and Kwame Raoul, who is a state senator from Chicago. They both live in Chicago. Well, some people thought, including myself, Pat Quinn would probably get the edge because of name recognition from all these years. However, if Pat Quinn were to win that, that would have given Bruce Rauner and the Republican Party all of the baggage against Pat Quinn that they used in the governor's race 4 years ago to use against the Democratic ticket this time. Oh, look, Pat Quinn recycled. He had problems with some patronage hiring at IDOT and a program in Chicago where they handed out money to community organizations for violence prevention when there wasn't good accounting on it, et cetera.
All of which came out in the Attorney General's race.
That's true. Well, Kwame Raoul, who has made a name in Springfield, he replaced Barack Obama when, he became a U.S. senator from the same area of Chicago, and he does has been a leader on some legislation about criminal justice reform, and he ended up winning that primary with 30% of the vote to 28% for Quinn, and the rest of the field, gosh, the third place finisher, if I've got it right, was Sharon Farrelly, who was a very impressive person who had run an oversight board about the Chicago Police Department, but she was not a known name and had not been elected to anything before, and Kwame Raoul was endorsed by Cook County Democrats and I think Kankakee County and one of them in the Metro East area. So he used, and in addition to the state AFL-CIO.
Right.
So you had workers for him all over the state. They won. It took away the Quinn issue from the Republicans. It was good for him, good for the Democrats. And he will face Erica Harold, who is the Republican candidate. She is a Harvard-educated lawyer who also happens to be 2003 Miss America. She is an attorney in Champaign-Urbana. And she ran against a guy named Gary Grasso, who is the former mayor of Burr Ridge and on the DuPage County Board, and she won 60-40. There was a little bit of a controversy about something she had said back when she was a pageant contestant when she was 20 or so, but she easily powered through that, and it will be...
I think that's going to be a big money, big advertising, big name contest in the fall.
I think it will. The Republicans seem, Governor Rauner had given her a recent more than $300,000 to boost her campaign. He talks about recruiting her. Her campaign said, well, lots of people asked her to run, but he has been high on the Erica Harold candidacy and certainly will help fund it, and we'll see where that goes. And Kwame Raoul, is now the standard bearer for Attorney General in the Democratic Party. And he was bashed by some of his opponents for taking money from a tobacco company owner, tobacco interest, et cetera. Pat Quinn talked about that. Raoul says, nobody buys my vote, and I have a 100% voting record with the clean air people. So we will hear lots of those kinds of things as the campaign goes on.
Do you think they can tie him to Madigan? Because that's going to be a common theme on pretty much every race, don't you think?
And well, clearly the Republican...
Maybe not in the federal races, but at the state level, sure.
The governor, as Doug and I just saw this morning at Ace Sign Company in Springfield, the governor had a campaign event. He talked to some local Republican officials and party folks, and basically said Mike Madigan is corrupt, and used something he's been starting to say lately, that even a newspaper says he's, it's like I'm fighting the mafia. Well, as PolitiFact Illinois has already pointed out, when the governor says a newspaper said that, he's discussing a Wall Street Journal article where he was quoted as saying it's like fighting the mafia. And so the governor, uses this. I asked him afterwards, how can you call him like the mafia? And he compared him to Al Capone recently. How can you do that when the guy has never been even charged with a crime, and you're using that kind of language? And then the governor goes on about, the whole property tax system helps his law firm, and that's not right, and it's corrupt. He's only talking about corruption. He's linking Madigan to everyone, It has helped him a little bit politically over time. The Republicans gained, what was it, 6 legislative seats last election, and a lot of that was tying legislators to Madigan. The governor hopes to do that again. I don't know if that works, given the fact that it's been out there for years. It might be getting a little stale as an argument, and you also have this potential Democratic wave coming.
Yeah. So, you know, the other thing that I, maybe it was wishful thinking, but not even a day passes, you know, of a quietness before the campaign started again. Wednesday morning, you know, barely 12 hours after the election had ended, we had ads from Pritzker, we had ads from Rauner.
This may be a new record. As I recall, Rod Blagojevich was up quite early with ads against Judy Bartz Pinka when he ran for a second term. But the morning after the election, that could be a new record.
You know, both of Rauner and Pritzker are both very well off. They have money, so it doesn't hurt them to use their resources when they think they will be helpful. You know, I remember back in the 1994 governor's race, and Jim Edgar started running ads, I think it was June or July, against Dawn Clark Netsch, saying she was a tax raiser because she wanted to shift the cost for funding schools away from property taxes into income taxes, and she's going to raise your taxes 42% or something. That number was burned into people's heads because of summer advertising, and Edgar won, I believe it was 101 of 102 counties that fall. So since then, it's gotten earlier and earlier, and when you have these candidates, Pritzker is totally self-funded. He doesn't even take money from other people. Rauner, you know, has donated, well, famously, $50 million of his own money, you know, right at the end of 2016. And he just has also what is considered unlimited funds and friends, you know, who have donated also.
I have to say, I think the ad that he threw out Wednesday morning was pretty, you know, effective. The Pritzker ad with the Dan Biss and Daniel Biss and Chris Kennedy quotes from the primary.
Right, and this, yes, you know, and this is Dan
clearly
Biss
had
saying,
it queued up, ready to go.
Sure, and this is, and actually that was from the event, the forum that we helped sponsor, the newspaper at UIS, where Biss afterwards was telling reporters, you know, it's so clear that Pritzker is Mike Madigan's candidate. You know, and then Chris Kennedy, who was very anti-Madigan during the campaign as well, his quote in that ad was that, what was it, that Pritzker is part of the pay-to-play political culture of the state. So, yeah, that fits right into what Rauner wants to say. I know that ad is online. On the other hand, the Pritzker campaign. Pritzker had a press conference the day after. It had, I think, 5 people in Chicago or somewhere up there saying these are people who have been hurt by Bruce Rauner's policies. And the ad that came out was that, you know, 4 years of failure is enough. They had a lot of TV shots of the Legionella outbreak at the veterans' home, of social service agencies closing, I think, that kind of thing.
Right, the budget impasse.
The two-year budget impasse and the impact that it's had. So, you know, they're both going to hit these themes, and the failed Rauner administration is going to be the Pritzker line, and you know, the Rauner line is going to be that Pritzker is part of the Madigan machine, and they're all corrupt.
And the question is, though, do voters at some point start tuning this stuff out?
I think that's a good question, because we're looking at, what is it, 200 days till the election?
I know it's more than 7 months, but less than 8, so we're lucky that way.
Yeah. I just wonder at a certain point if people are metaphorically going to cover their ears and screech, I can't take it anymore.
More and more people are going to watch Netflix. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm starting to believe that we will go over 300 million.
It does seem, with the passions inflamed and with the deep pockets of the gubernatorial candidates, that limits don't apply this year.
Well, maybe next week we'll have to make our predictions and then tune back in November and see how close we were. Moving on from the state races, you know, the other thing that set up is a couple of should be very interesting congressional seats to watch with the 13th. You know, as we mentioned earlier, Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan won quite handily. I think maybe a few people were surprised at the margin. I think, you know, there was a widespread expectation she was the favorite in the race.
Yeah.
You certainly predicted that one.
Well, I did. And she's a Springfield person, and her, you know, Dirksen middle name, she doesn't think she's related to Everett Dirksen, but the Londrigan name is very well known in Springfield. And she ended up with almost 46% of the vote in a five-person field. She had some prominent endorsements, most prominent U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Jesse White was on her side. Even Mayor Jim Langfelder of Springfield was on her side. She had a lot, you know, she was...
I think Senator Duckworth endorsed her, too.
Okay.
Okay.
She also had Emily's List, which is a national organization that promotes Democratic women who are pro-choice. And there was another woman on the ballot, Angel Sides, but she was a minor candidate that really not part of the, you know, not a heavy political hitter. So Londrigan had a lot of the women's vote and, you know, kind of taking advantage of this enthusiasm that's out there and the marchers and the organizations that have come alive. So, and she also has this story that her son Jack was, I think, bitten by a tick some years ago, and as a either 12-year-old or teenager, ended up in the hospital for a long time and nearly died. So healthcare, she said she was moved to run when Rodney Davis was celebrating, you know, the kind of the end of Obamacare and pushing for it. So that will be a big issue. And the 13th Congressional District, where Rodney Davis, the Republican, is the incumbent, can go both ways politically, even though Davis, you know, travels a lot. He gets criticized for not having town halls, but he also says, why just open yourself up into a room where people can yell at you?
Right.
But in that race, David Gill had run a few times, a doctor from Bloomington. He only got 14% this time. Eric Jones was a bright young candidate who has worked on congressional committees and of an assistant attorney general in Illinois. And also was endorsed by his former boss, Lisa Madigan, the attorney general. He got 22%, so really less than half of what Betsy Dirks-Londrigan got. And he also grew up in Centralia and lives in Edwardsville. It's kind of at the southern part of the district without a population center like Springfield. And then John Ebel is a professor of religion at University of Illinois and had some good ads at the end, but a new candidate and got 13%.
Well, the other thing, too, is you're going to see a lot of national attention on that race. You know, I mean, the National Republican Congressional Committee had a press release out, you know, barely after the polls had closed, you know, criticizing Londrigan, you know, calling her an Elizabeth Warren acolyte, I think.
Right. And she's like, that's all they got. We're going to hear a lot of that. And, you know, we will move on. They know, and everybody, and David Gill pointed out significantly, when this district was newly drawn and the first race in it in 2012, David Gill almost beat Rodney Davis, who was within like a percent. But there was also an independent candidate who was also progressive
splitting
on some issues,
the vote, yeah,
who took 7%. And so Gill keeps saying, I could have won. I'm the guy that can beat him this time. But that dynamic plus the Trump midterm thing, I'm sure, is giving the Democrats hope. And Rodney Davis will try to paint her as the kind of, you know, liberal person or progressive person that this district doesn't want. But it is a half and half. Over in the 18th,
We've got a rematch.
We've got a rematch between Darren LaHood, the congressman from Peoria, and Junius Rodriguez, who is a professor at Eureka College. He ran against LaHood in the past. The 18th is much more Republican, so it's probably not going to get the national attention unless there is a most amazing wave. There was a pretty good Democratic side race here because a guy named Brian Dieters, I think Quincy is his hometown, but has also been a soccer coach in Morton, I believe. And he got like 39.5% of the vote, but Junius Rodriguez got 41.7%. And person named Daryl Miller, who's from Danvers, Illinois, who has run before, kind of a low-key guy, got just under 20%. So they split it, but Junius Rodriguez is there and will be up against Darren LaHood, who got 79% over... also a kind of a soft-spoken and very conservative person named Donald Reince.
All right, then. So a lot to wrap up, and I think we will be not getting much of a respite in the campaign season.
It's all... Go ahead, Doug.
No, I'm just looking at Doug's face. That's, you know, it's too bad we're not on video.
Why can't they leave us alone? Why did the governor have an event in Springfield today already?
But, Doug, at what point does the General Assembly, now that we've gotten past the election, we still have the holiday break for Easter, and then they'll be back in April?
April 10th, I believe it is, when they're due back. And after that, it's full speed ahead for whatever they intend to do, although... election years, they tend not to do great and controversial things just because both sides want to keep their candidates off of anything that's going to come back to haunt them. So,
well, you know, there's always passing the budget, which didn't used to be a great and controversial thing, but this year, who knows, it might be. But I think we're about out of time, so that could be a topic for next week. This has been Under the Dome, the State Journal Register podcast about state government and politics. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. You also can ask Alexa to play us, and we look forward to talking with you next week. Thanks for listening.